Okay, welcome everyone. Okay, so this is going to be a very different seminar. I'd say don't take notes unless you have to, because I'll send you the notes for free. So, and it's going to be better for me. I don't know if you have to sit in back, go ahead, but if you can come up closer, there's a reason for it. Just sit in this area in here. This is going to be more like we're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to like enter into a story. We're going to go into the story ourselves. It's going to be unique. Okay. It's like the mass of humanity out there. Whew. 20 minutes ago, I was sitting in the Pinewood Social working on this. I'm having breakfast with my son and my... my time zone is off, so it's like I'm supposed to be over here right now. So apparently there weren't any police out there, so that was really helpful. Okay, we're going to pray. And so yesterday morning, I did two seminars that were just, the Lord just blessed immensely. And then the third seminar, my brain just literally shut off. And in the middle of my presentation, my slides were gone. And I'm looking out and going like, uh-oh, what do I do? And I like... and my brain just completely shut off. So this morning, I'm very excited about this. This is part two of yesterday. Yesterday morning, or last evening, we talked about the simple, the mockers, and the fools, and how you can turn from being a simple person. And a simple person is just basically a thoughtless, he's easily gullible, and he's easily enticed. And so how do we get our children to be thoughtful? How do we get our children to have discernment, to know what's good and what's evil, what are good friends and what are bad friends? And so that turns to simple person to become a youthful, knowledgeable person. Gaining knowledge is key. And then becoming a discerning, wise person that leads to an understanding of who the Holy One is, which is Jesus. So we're going to look at all of that this morning. But we're going to like, this is going to be like your mouth hooked up to a fire hydrant and put in full speed. It is intense. So we're going to pray and we're going to get right into it. Lord, bless us, help us, help me to communicate these truths that you have entrusted me with, so that they might, at the very least, cause us to want to know more about wisdom and folly's enticements, Lord, so that we can hold on to wisdom, that we can be in love with her and embrace her to guide our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, I'm going to propose something very unique. So I want you to think completely out of the box. Okay, I know I'm supposed to make this announcement. If you want to text later on, remind me at the end. I'm going to give you a text, and you can get this, some of the seminars for free, and we'll do that at the very end. I don't want to take any more time. So let's just, you're a blank slate right now, and I'm going to teach you something that's like foreign to you. I'm going to propose to you that the book of Proverbs is actually, chapters 1 through 9 at least, is an actual story. It is a running story nonstop. And it's a father teaching his son 12 lessons. And if the son embraces these 12 lessons or these 12 rules to life, then he will obtain wisdom and his life will be prosperous. If he refuses to listen to these rules, then his life will be a life of loss, anxiety, depression, and frustration. So I want you to just kind of grasp that idea that this is actually this is story time. This is a story that a father is going to teach his son, and each lesson builds on the other. Lessons 1 through 6 are kind of like elementary school. Actually, lessons 1 through 3 are elementary school, 4 through 6 are kind of junior high, and then 7 through 12 are senior high. And then he graduates in chapter 10, verse 1, and he gets to go on to the wisdom books of the Bible. I'm also going to propose something else. I'm going to propose that, and this is going to be unique, and I don't want to overwhelm you with stuff. I just want to give you some introduction to Hebrew thought. Now, I've been working on this for the last 2.5 years, and it has changed the course of my life. I've been working on a dissertation, and what I found in the study is that, of course, now answer this question, or finish the statement. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of... two different words I got coming out of the audience. Some said knowledge, some said wisdom. It's not wisdom. It's knowledge, okay? Now, it's wisdom in chapter 9, but you can't have wisdom until you go from chapter 1 to chapter 9. So that's kind of interesting. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Then you have to pass 12 tests in order to acquire wisdom. And that's what the father's going to do. He's going to give his son 12 rules to live by, and if he passes each one of those tests, then he's going to get to the wisdom chapter, chapter 9, where the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So wisdom requires a lot of work and effort. You just don't obtain it just because you want it. There's 12 rules that are absolutely essential to get. So before we get there, though, I want to look at this idea of framing, Hebraic framing. It's gorgeous. It's not just what the Bible means, but how the Bible means it. So the Bible is written structurally. It's written poetically. It's written majestically. It's not just written with words to give us these theological ideas and inspiration. It's actually written architecturally, which is magnificently beautiful. Once you begin to open your eyes to see the architectural drawings of the Bible, you see that God not only wrote the Bible thematically and narratively, he also wrote the Bible structurally. And so what he does is he repeats words, and then he frames things. And in the very center of those frames is the theological significant meaning that he's trying to convey. Now, so what he does here in the wisdom books, primary wisdom books are Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs. In those books, before you look at all of the wisdom literature of those five books are also a running story. Job deals with suffering. Psalms deals with psalms and lament and praise. Proverbs deals with character development. Ecclesiastes deals with the unknown. What do you do when nothing makes sense? And that leads you to trusting God in such a way that the fear of the Lord keep his commandments. And then you get to Song of Solomon, which is the love book. And guess what? Each one of those books is framed with, guess what? The fear of the Lord, the fear of the Lord, the fear of God, the fear of God, and then love and love. Each one of the wisdom books, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, are all framed with the fear of God, and then in the center, the fear of the Lord. And that's interesting because Genesis chapter 1 starts off with God, Elohim, created the heavens and the earth. Chapter 2, it's Yahweh creates. And the reason for that is that chapter 1 is this God of power that creates the earth with just a word. And then chapter 2 is Yahweh. He's tender and he's walking with his creation. He's the relational God. So you got the powerful God and the relational God. And that's where fear, the understanding of fear, comes in. He's powerful. You better look out. And he's also relational. He wants to love you. But you can't enjoy his love until you first get his fear. Okay? And so many Christians today, they want to bypass the fear part and get right to the love part. If I can remember what love without truth is hypocrisy, and love, what is it?
Brutality.
Say it again.
Love without truth is brutality.
Yeah. I think I'm the one that coined this thing, but I can't remember what I said. Anyways. Okay, so let's forget that. So look at this amazing chart here. Let's see if I can get my thing to work here. Okay, so fear of Elohim, Job 1. Does Job fear God, Elohim, for anything? Ecclesiastes 12:13. The fear of Elohim, fear God and keep his commandments. And so you've got the wisdom books framed with fear Elohim, fear God. In the center, guess what you have? You have fear, Yahweh fear, Yahweh fear, fear Yahweh, fear Yahweh. This actually gives us an incredible framing. It's beautiful to be able to write like this. Someone wrote these books intentionally with fear of God and fear of Yahweh in the center of these things to reflect back to Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, because that's where real wisdom, if you want to enjoy the relationship, you got to understand the fear, which brings you to Song of Solomon's love and love frames those books. Okay, so that's just kind of foundational. Just wanted to share that with you, just a little bit of how the Bible is not only written, but how the Bible means, okay? So you got to have encompassing fear in order to experience encompassing love. The foundation of godly fear frames a life of love. It really does, you know? Because once you get outside of the boundaries and you want to like live life on your own, you don't really experience love. In fact, what you start experiencing is lust. That's what happens. It comes in so quickly. As soon as you get outside the boundaries of fear, you start being inducted into the hall of lust. Fear of God must encompass our life before we can experience His encompassing love. But first, we must understand God's rules before we can experience His love. You can't live by your own rules. I did that for over 22 years. I lived by my own rules. And every time I try to live by my own rules, there's always a problem. Rule number one in my life right now is simply this. Love your wives. Do not be bitter against them. Why? Why can't she have that rule? I'd rather my wife have that rule. But that's the rule that I have to live by. No matter how upset we might get in our marriage, I have to, by this rule, love my wife and not be bitter against her, no matter what. If I'm willing to live by that rule, guess what happens? I get to enjoy the love part by living by that rule. That's one of the rules. So, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, verse 1, chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, chapter 9. That's where we're going. In the story form, we're going from knowledge to wisdom. There's a lot of knowledge to gather in between these two frames. And it says this, in the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. That's where we're heading. And the Holy One is, guess who? None other than Jesus Christ. In fact, Jesus, we're going to look at, when we talk about wisdom, in the New Testament it says that Jesus is who? The wisdom of God. Okay? So that's where the Bible is written about Jesus. Everywhere in the Bible, all of the Psalms, all of the wisdom books, the whole Bible really is centered around who Jesus is so that we might be able to know Him better. That's what this is all about. Oh, let me... So acquiring knowledge that leads to wisdom, leading to an understanding of the Holy One, is dependent upon the 12 rules for life that the Father is going to teach. If the rules are followed, the Son will have a life of wisdom, health, success, meaning, peace, prosperity, protection, and purpose. I didn't just pull these out of the wind. These are in the book of Proverbs. Those words in Hebrew are there. Success, meaning, peace, prosperity, protection, and purpose. They're all there. If you reject the rules, it'll result in loss, anxiety, depression, apathy, selfishness, greed, lust, and regret. Those words are all in the book of Proverbs. So here we are. Here we are homeschooling our kids and preparing them for college. I'd say these 12 lessons, they trump everything. These 12 lessons are the most important lessons that we can teach our children. Watch this. Buyer, beware. If you're going to embrace these 12 lessons, know this. The test is going to be difficult. There's going to be one test for every lesson, 12 total. Each child in this room, each parent that's going to teach their children, every time a child passes the test of learning lesson number one, there's going to be a test that accompanies it. And the test is going to be severe. And we're going to look at all the 12 tests that accompany these. Folly is the eternal enemy of our souls and our children's souls. She is out to get our children. She's real. She's authentic. She's a real person. The whole Bible is filled with folly. Folly will do everything in her power to keep the son from following his father's instructions. And the word instruction in Hebrew is the word for correction. You gain knowledge that leads to wisdom by embracing correction. That is the most important lesson in all of the lessons. How willing are you to receive correction? We're going to talk about that. She's tenacious, she takes no for an answer, and she entraps and she devours. Folly's tenacity and tactics. She flatters with her lips, she beguiles with her beauty, she entices with her touch. That's chapters 5, 6, and 7. Okay? Chapters 5, 6, and 7, she flatters with her words, she beguiles with her beauty, she entices with her touch. We're going to look at a little while. I'll just give you a little taste of what's going to happen. In chapter 7, this is what she does. You ready? I've been looking for you. I've been looking for, oh, you're my soulmate. And guess what? I just paid my vows. I'm religious. I'm a Christian like you. And then she hugs him. And then she holds him. And then she kisses him. And then he's dead. It's amazing. This person, Folly, she is out to get our kids. And guess what? She's winning. I'm watching it. I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm watching homeschool kids in their 20s and 30s reject God and go off the deep end. I'm working with kids right now that are confused about their gender. Homeschool kids raised in good Christian homes. Why is that? It's because of the 12 lessons. We're going to look deeply at them. These 12 lessons, I believe, will guard your children's lives for the rest of their lives into eternity. That's how important they are. This is what she promises: prosperity, protection, peace, promotion, and pleasure. And remember this, if you follow pleasure, it will always destroy you. But if pleasure follows you because you pay a price, it will always bring you to freedom. Always remember that. If pleasure follows you, it will destroy you. If you follow pleasure, it will destroy you. But if pleasure follows you because you paid a price, it will always bring enjoyment. Okay, here we go. Ready? This is a video that our students did at the Lamplighter Guild last summer. Let's take a look at it. I don't know if you can turn the lights off there, Trey. Oop. Let's see if it works again. Oh, come on. You got to work. Okay, I'll make it work. You watch this. We'll make this work. We're not getting any sound, everybody. Can we get some sound? Our sound guy's gone. A little louder. Trey, hit this thing. Make that louder. The projector. Turn the projector up. So this is a film, a very short film, about folly and her treachery that our students did last year. I love it.
Talia, yes, I have a very special dinner to go to.
Oh, with Saggio?
Yes.
Sounds nice. Well, sometime when you're not rushing off to a very special dinner, I'd like to talk to you about something. Something pretty important, and very special as well.
Okay, look, I don't mean to be rude, but I really need to go.
Then go. I'm not stopping you.
Thanks. Thanks.
Second thoughts?
No, I just wanted to say I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude.
How sweet of you.
Okay, well, I really do have to go. Maybe we can talk some other time.
I understand.
What's that perfume you're wearing?
Do you like it?
I do. Very much.
It's a special blend imported from the Middle East. An ancient recipe of myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon.
I read about that somewhere. Didn't they use those same spices on the pharaohs of Egypt?
You're so smart.
Well, okay then.
There's something I need to discuss with you. I know you're in a hurry, but it'll only take a moment.
All right, Just a moment.
Job on that, didn't they? So the Lamplighter Guild, that's what we do there. In fact, the girl who played Folly, kind of interesting, she's down in the booth. She's one of the speakers here. I think she's like 19 years old. Let's see, play from current slide. Cecilia, she's one of the nicest. You got to go after seeing this. You got to go look at what she really looks like. Like this innocent homeschool girl, you know. And she played the role of Folly here, and she did a phenomenal job. I don't know how she did that, but that is a picture of what happens. Now, listen, we're preparing our kids, you know, for college. We got to prepare them for this because this is what they're going to be up against, you know, in the sexual cultures that we live in right now. I don't know how our kids are going to make it. I really don't. It's the sexuality, the perverseness of our culture. It's so saturated around our families. Kids, I wouldn't personally allow my kids up until 14 years old to have an iPhone, or I wouldn't even let them have a computer. I know that's debatable, because you know if you keep your kids from something, they're going to want it all the more. And does that really help? Maybe it's better just to prepare their hearts so they can have discernment to know between good and evil. It's probably the better solution. But I'm a little bit overprotective in that way. I don't want to provide them with the tools to experience these things too soon. So we're going to just get right into it. Here's the introduction to Proverbs. Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. When I saw that, I thought, you know, God always starts the book of the Bible with the most important meaning usually. Each one of the books of the Bible, if you look at the first sentence, you miss it. You know, like Ecclesiastes, you know, we think of vanity, vanity, all is vanity. But if you look closely, guess what it says first? The words of the preacher. And guess how it ends? The words of the preacher. It's the words that are more important. You know why? Because if you pay attention to the words, you won't fall into a life of vanity and vexation. This starts off with Proverbs of Solomon. And I looked at him going like, I wonder what Proverbs means. And I looked at it, and guess what the root word means? It's the exact same root word that's found in Genesis chapter 1. The sun ruled the day and the moon ruled the night. The Proverbs are the words that rule our lives. So these are not just these, you know, these sayings, dot, dot, dot. You know, these are rules that we're to live our life, govern our lives by. So to know wisdom, this is how it starts. The Proverbs of Solomon, then it says, to know wisdom. That's not just a statement. That's a statement of meaning. To know wisdom is to know Jesus. That's what it's talking about. The most important focus in life is to know wisdom. To know wisdom is to know Christ. To know wisdom, and secondly, correction. You know wisdom by a willingness to be corrected. That's how it starts. Most people don't want to be corrected. This will lead to a prudent, cautious, thoughtful decision-making life. I grew up as a kid that didn't have any sense of cautiousness. I didn't have any sense of thoughtfulness. I just made decisions and just went for it. How do we cultivate in our children this sense of thoughtful decision-making? Because that's what the word prudent means. By fearing the Lord, which is the beginning of knowledge. If you're correctable, the simple will become wise and understanding. Otherwise, the simple will become mocking fools, despising wisdom and correction. That's what it says. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and correction. You go one of the two directions. You either fear the Lord or you despise wisdom and correction. And what do you become? You become a mocker. Why do you become a mocker? Because mocking puts other people down so that I look bigger. That's what happens when people are insecure and they don't have the fear of the Lord. They have more of the fear of man in their lives. And when you grow up and you become more, the fear of man is more important, pleasing man is more important than pleasing and fearing God, You will always become a mocker because you'll always have to put other people down to make yourself look bigger. You see it all the time. You see it, by the way, you see it in leaders. That's the worst kind. The very worst of the worst kind is in pastors. Pastors who have this sense of authority rather than servanthood. You want to know why I know that? I was like that. It's awful to be like that. Lesson number one. Well, hold on. The significance of accepting correction can't be overstated. Robert Lewis, in his book, The Raising a Modern Day Knight, said this: there are seven principles of biblical manhood: a will to obey, a work to do, a woman to love, to reject passivity, accept responsibility, lead courageously, expect the greater reward for doing so. Guess what? I never memorized that. It's just stuck. It makes sense. The first three are foundational to every young man and every young woman. It's simple as this: a will to obey, a work to do, a woman to love. Every man wants to have a woman to love. That's how God created us. In fact, in a few minutes, we're going to get into lesson four. Guess what lesson four is? Romance. I am going to give you a biblical view of romance that's going to rock you. It is amazing. And you know what? What's the world doing right now? It's just pervading us with pornography and sexuality, right? But when you see a godly view of romance, it is exciting and it is enjoyable. It's pleasurable and it frees you. The other way, it imprisons you. It binds you and restricts you. A will to obey, that's where knowledge starts. When I'm interviewing somebody, I can just see it in them. I can see whether or not they're going to be an employee that is going to have a will to obey. Are they going to resist me at every corner, or are they going to have this yielded spirit that they're going to listen to what I have to say? That doesn't mean they don't come to me and say, hey, can we do this a different way? I'm fine with that. But you can tell when someone's got an obstinate personality and they get rigid. Did you ever see a horse like that? That horse just gets their neck up in the air like that? Oh, I want to beat them to death when they do that. Okay, a will to obey. If you have a will to obey, guess what doors will open to you? Your work. You have a submissive, yielded spirit to your employers, and God will open doors for you to excel and climb. That's why when I give promotions, it's because I see a yielded spirit. That's first and foremost. That's before skillfulness. That's before anything else. A will to obey, a yielded spirit. That opens the door for a work to do, and that's what gives women the security that they need, because they want a husband that secures them with the work that they have. Will to obey, it starts there. Work to do opens the door. Then a woman to love. The woman now has the peace and security that she's looking for. And then the man goes forward. He rejects passivity, accepts responsibility, leads courageously. This is all by faith, by the way. And then he expects the greater reward for doing so. Lesson number one, be careful. This is what Solomon says. This is the first most important lesson you will teach your children according to God. He says, beware of greedy gain. Beware of false prosperity. Wonder why he uses that lesson as the first lesson. As I have lived my life, I have lived through all of the schemes do you remember that ACI liquid stuff? You drink it, it's the fruit thing, and they had the pyramid thing. Beware of pyramids, okay? Beware of star programs that they make you put posters on there of the car or the vacation that you're going to get, okay? That's how they entice people. Focus on this and you'll get it. That is ridiculous. Beware of greedy gain and false prosperity. Without a will to obey, children will be unable to discern between good and evil, and their values will determine their friends. Proverbs 1:8-9 says, beware of mocking fools, foolish peers, who give the perception of power by taking advantage of the weak for greedy gain. This is what they say. Come with us. We'll all have one purse. We'll gain by taking advantage of weaker people. That's the first lesson. That's why it's so important in the sandbox when your children are 2, 3, 4. By the way, I saw a title in one of them that says, don't share in the sandbox. I wanted to go hear that seminar. Don't let your kids share in the sandbox because it teaches socialism. I wanted to hear what that was all about. It sounded really cool. Beware of mocking and foolish peers who give the perception of power by taking advantage of the weak for greedy gain. You teach your kids in the sandbox, when someone's picking on a weaker person, you stand up for the weaker person. That is what God's teaching here. Because when they're adults, they'll be able to defend the weak who have no voice. That's what Proverbs talks about. That's why we are where we are in the abortion scenario today. There's not many people that are standing up for the people who are weak and have no voice. So we got to teach our children at an early age. We need to, by example, show them that we are going to not go after greedy gain and take advantage of the weak in order to get what we think we want. Learning this lesson will determine whether you fear God or man. There's a book that Dr. Welch wrote. It's called When People Are Big and God Is Small. Read the book. Okay? How many read the book? Okay? It is essential reading. If you have a problem with fear and anxiety in your life, most likely people are big and God is small in your life. Read that book. It's an excellent book. Lesson number two. How long, wisdom says, before you make a U-turn? The simple, mockers, and foolish are invited by wisdom to join her. This is amazing. This is chapter 1, verses 8 through 19. Chapter 1, verses 19 and on. Wisdom steps on the scene. Notice this. The father's teaching the first lesson. The first lesson the father teaches is, My son, beware of greedy gain, taking advantage of the weak for your prosperity. That's the first lesson he teaches. Lesson number two, substitute teacher. Wisdom comes in and says, Father, just hold on 1 second. I'm going to teach this lesson myself. Wisdom thinks this lesson so important, she teaches this one herself, and she says this. She says, how long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will mockers delight in their mocking and fools hate knowledge? She invites the simple, the mockers, and the fools all to come into her presence. She's going to allow them to be changed by her wisdom. And then she says this, which I think is one of the most important verses in the book of Proverbs. She says, turn at my reproof and I'll pour out my spirit to you. I'll make known my words to you. This is where it starts. If you want your children to enjoy this, of God pouring out his spirit and making known his words, it starts by a willingness to turn, a willingness to be corrected. No one likes to be corrected. But if we can embrace that at an early age, if we can demonstrate by modeling that to our children, as adults, we still might have that unyielded spirit to those in authority over us. You got to get over it. You've got to be able to get through that. You got to ask God, I need your help. Guess is the best way to practice this. Like, for example, if you're stingy, start giving. That's the way it starts. Writing money out in your checkbook and give it away. That's how you get rid of stinginess and greed. What's the next one? I'll get it in a second. What is it? Yes. If you're unwilling to yield to authority, thank you, Mika. If you're unwilling to yield to authority, you humble yourself before your employers, before those in authority over you. And guess what you do? You say, what can I do differently? And not only that, you say, what am I not seeing that you see in my life? Ooh, that's dangerous. Okay? If you are willing to get someone, a moderate antagonist in your life, and say to them, I give you full rein. I want you to tell me what I don't see in my life. When I started practicing this, did I hate it. I hated it so much. Guess who I gave the first reins to do this? My wife and my kids. No recourse. There'll be nothing against you. You can say anything you want. Whatever you see, I will accept and I will work on it. When they first started, I would like... And I would do like, but don't you realize that you, and Debbie go, don't go there. Don't do that. This is about you, Mark. And you know what? It was a life transforming experience in my life, and it still is. I just shared this yesterday. Just before I got here, I had a past employee come to me to tell me some things that they felt needed to be addressed in my life. And I was like, I agree with you. I've never been able to do that before. It frees us. That's why Jesus said, agree quickly with your adversary while you're in the way with them. Don't put it off. Don't get into this bind where you just got to protect your image. God will protect your image. Humble yourself, therefore, into the mighty hand of God. And what will he do? He'll lift you up in due time. Okay? That due time is an awful time to wait, but God knows exactly when it's right. Joseph, 20 years in prison. I'll lift you up at the right time. Moses, at the right time. Daniel, at the right time. Let God lift you up. When God lifts you up, guess what? No one else can put you down. It's kind of cool. This I cannot speak enough about. Turn at my reproof. When you're proven wrong, don't try to defend yourself. Turn. That's the word for repentance, by the way. And I'll pour out my spirit. I'll make known my words to you. Lesson number three, hidden treasure. This is chapter one. Now we're going to go in chapter two. Chapter two says this. It starts off with, and again, this is a running story. The father says, son, my son, if you seek wisdom as silver and search for his hidden treasure, that's got to be the next step. That's the next rule in life. Seek wisdom as hidden treasure. How often have we given our kids that kind of appetite? Hidden treasure? That is the coolest thing. You know, what kid doesn't love to look for hidden treasure? You know, Easter time, we got to do it at Easter time. But hidden treasure, it might be a cool game just to let them experience the thrill of that. You know, my mom, she loves doing this. She puts, once in a while, she'll put like $5, $10, $20, and a $50 bill in aluminum foil, and she'll hide it around the house. And then when all the grandkids come home, they all got to try to search for it. You should see the house. My kids are in their 30s, you know? The grandkids are like 10 to 15, and they're like turning the house upside down. The couches are being turned over. It's just a crazy time. But what a great illustration of seeking for wisdom. If you seek for wisdom as silver and search for her as hidden treasure, if then you will understand the fear of the Lord. How do you understand the fear of the Lord? Watch this. And the fear of the Lord, by the way, is quite simple. It's hate what God hates. Hate pride, selfishness, arrogance, and sowing discord among the brethren. Those are the four hates. That's what God hates. Then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and then find the knowledge of God. This is how it's found. God actually gives it if you're willing to seek like hidden treasure. That means like tomorrow morning, you wake up and you say, okay, God, I want to find your wisdom today, and I'm willing to pay a price for it. By the way, wisdom's never free. Salvation's free. Wisdom is not. Wisdom comes with a price. And usually the price is extreme, not just gentle, extreme humility. That's the way it's been in my life. Extreme humility. God humbles us in order to get to the wisdom that he wants to give us. The fear of the Lord, and then you will find the knowledge of God. By the way, doesn't make sense to me. Think about this. All the stuff that we're learning in life. Why not learn the things that God, the creator of all creation, why not pursue the knowledge that he's given us rather than the knowledge of mankind? I would think the knowledge of mankind falls a little bit short of the knowledge of God. Okay? So that's what our kids need more than anything. That's what we need. If you get the knowledge of God, you know what? You'll be entrepreneurial. You'll be able to start new businesses. You'll be able to overcome cancer in the research lab. You'll be able to, a homeschool kid developed a theory that works to be able to split hydrogen to be able to run automobiles on it for free. He did it, a homeschool kid. The automobile industry found out about it. I was there, found out about it, paid the family off. They would not let it to be publicized. Isn't that crazy? This kid, you should have seen this kid. This kid is so smart. He knows the Bible inside and out. He obtained wisdom. As a result of that wisdom, he became a scientist, and he's incredible. Our kids, we have the opportunity to prepare our kids to change this world so that when people hear them speak, when people see their research, when people read their books, they're like, they will make C.S. Lewis and Tolkien look like nothing. Our kids have that kind of ability if we'll prepare them with this. Furthermore, then you'll understand how to live wisely, righteously, justly, and fairly. Chapter 2, verse 10 through 19. I love this. This is running. This is exactly out of the Bible. If you seek, then you'll find, and then you'll gain, then you'll understand. Then, guess what happens? Then wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will become pleasant to your soul. There's the key. At first, knowledge isn't too pleasant. At first, knowledge is like, I can't get this. I don't understand this. It's like when you first learn arithmetic. You know, you first learn addition, that's easy. Then subtraction, that's easy. But then you go to multiplication, okay, I finally get it. But then division is like, and then you get it, and that block is removed, and you get it. Same thing happens here with wisdom. Wisdom, if you pursue her like hidden treasure, wisdom will enter your heart. God does this, and knowledge will become pleasant to your soul. And once knowledge becomes pleasant to your soul, guess what happens after that? You're unstoppable. You will read everything. You can't put books down. I mean, I'm kind of crazy this way right now. I mean, I'm a pilot. I put my plane in automatic pilot, and I read. That's why I got my pilot's license, because it got dangerous while I was driving and reading, you know, so. I've read whole books driving for 3 hours. Never mind. Okay, when wisdom enters your heart, knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discernment, this is the advantage, this is the result, this is the reward. You ready for this? Discernment will preserve you, and understanding will guard you and deliver you from froward-speaking corrupt man and loose-lipped women. Those are the two things you got to look out for in life. The corrupt-speaking man and the loose-lipped woman. I see the corrupt-speaking man all the time. I can see him a mile away. You can tell the way he talks. In fact, Proverbs talks about this. Not only does he speak corruptly, but he moves his hands and his feet. He's unable to be kind of like stationary. He's just got this... He's got these movements to him. You can tell the way a person walks a little bit about their character. You see guys in gangs, kids that are just really, they're violent. You see the way they walk. There's a certain personality profile in the way that they walk. There's something that's happening to kids, the way kids look. Kids in high school, when I was in school, didn't have beards. Today, I've seen the high schools, kids 7th grade through 12th grade all have beards and mustaches. It's changing their actual chemical properties of their bodies. The testosterone is being released because of the sexual gender revolution that we're under. So that was lesson 3, lesson 4. Okay, and we're going to really fly here because I want to get to the main 3 lessons. Holy smoke. Oh, dear. Okay, so lesson 4, I'm not going to even cover this one. That's where you get to chapter 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not unto your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge Him. But guess what? The reason for this is He doesn't want you to be, guess what? Wise in your own eyes. He wants you to have His wisdom, not your own. Why? Because if you turn away from evil, it will be healing and refreshment to your flesh and bones. If you want to have a healthy life, this is how to acquire it. Honor the Lord with your wealth and first fruits of your produce, then your barns and vats will be filled and bursting. You will prosper if you focus on these lessons. This leads to prosperity. This is amazing stuff. But watch what happens next. Next lesson, lesson 5. Don't forget God's favor that allowed you to prosper. Remember what the first lesson was? Beware of false prosperity and greedy gain. Why? Because God's going to allow you to gain and prosper in His own way. God's going to do it His own way. But what happens in chapter 3, after the midway point, He says, my son, this was good, but most likely when people start prospering, guess what happens? They forget. Don't despise now the correction, the Lord's correction, or be weary of His reproof, because that's what's going to happen. Once you start prospering, God's going to give you some course correction in your life. And He says this, the Lord will rebuke the one He loves as a father and the son whom He delights. What's the very first thing that the Father said from heaven when Jesus was on the earth? This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. Actually, He says something different, depending on what gospel you're reading. The other one says, you are my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. So Mark and Matthew are different. And here's the reason for it. One, He says it publicly. The other one, He says it privately. But I want you to rethink what He's actually saying. Let me rephrase this. Publicly, this is my Son in whom I love. And Son, I take great pleasure in you. When we as parents approach our children like that publicly, it will make a difference in their lives. Rather than, would you get over here? You're embarrassing me. Get over here. Stop acting like that. What our kids need to hear from us is, this is my Son in whom I love, and I take pleasure in Him. If you have not been able to take pleasure in your children, find out how to do it. Ask God how to take pleasure in your children. You know why? Because that reflects what God wants to do with us. He wants to take pleasure in us. If you haven't read the book Desiring God by John Piper, read it. The chief end of man is to glorify God, not and enjoy Him forever, but the chief end of man is to glorify God by enjoying Him forever. How many are Christian hedonists in here? 1, 2, 3. Okay, 3 out of a couple hundred people, you're Christian hedonists, okay? We are going to invite you to join our club, okay? Christian hedonism is kind of cool, okay? Now, hedonists are people that live for pleasure, but a Christian hedonist is someone who lives for the pleasure of God. And once you get that concept, by the way, I became a Christian hedonist 25 years ago, and it rocked my world. I've not been the same since. When I wake up in the morning, one of the first things I think about is God wants to take pleasure in me today. And I want to take pleasure in Him. I want to partner with God today in such a way that I get to experience things that are unthinkable, unplanned, and only could have happened by Him. Because that's the kind of God and Father I serve. So that my Father, when He looks at me, He says to the angels up there and says, look what Hamby's doing today. It's kind of cool. That's how God is. He wants to take pleasure in us. You need to take pleasure in your children. And you need to let them know privately as well. You're my son. And I love you, and I take pleasure in you. That's what God wants. That's what this is all about. As a father in the son in whom He delights, there's great pleasure, but it only happens when the son's willing to be corrected. Blessed, the next verse, blessed is he who finds wisdom. Not given to you, finds it. She's a tree of life to those who lay hold on her. Where did the tree of life come from? This is the second time it appears, by the way. It appears once in Genesis, once in Proverbs, and guess where it appears next? Revelation. And it forms a beautiful framing device with, guess who's in the middle? Jesus himself in the book of Proverbs, chapter 8. He's the creator of the world. Wisdom claims to be God himself. She's a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. She promises pleasantness, prosperity, pleasure, and peace to those who follow her closely and are called blessed. Lesson 6. Oh, this is fearless footing in the face of false prosperity. My son, don't let these truths depart from your sight. Guard wisdom and discernment. They will be life for your soul, favor to your neck. You will walk safely and your foot will not stumble or be restricted. I love that part. It will not be restricted. That means that God is going to open up new paths for you to be able to enjoy life in ways that you won't be restricted from the things that you do. A lot of people in life, they just can't, like, I don't know what to do with my life. I don't know how to get ahead. God opens new doors. When you lie down, there'll be no fear. When you sleep, will be sweet. We live in a major, catastrophic culture where people have to take medication because they can't sleep anymore. God promises sleep. In your sleep, it says, will be sweet. No fear of sudden terror of the Lord. You won't have to worry about what's going on Fox News and CNN. You won't have to worry about the false economic catastrophe. 15 years ago, there was the economic crash in the culture. Okay? And my wife and I were getting ready to take out a loan to build our house. And we wouldn't do that if we didn't have the money to pay for it. So we thought that was the best way to do it. It was an investment. We were going to get equity because we were going to build a house. And all of my advisors said, don't do it. The economy's going to crash. Economy's going to crash. It hadn't crashed yet. Economy's, don't do it. And so everyone else around me didn't do it. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to live my life according to the fear of the economy. I'm going to live my life because of the fear of God. And God, I'm going to place this in your hands. I think this is a good decision. It didn't crash. And just 3 months ago, we paid off our house. Don't let the culture dictate what you're going to do with your life. Do not withhold good from... And then notice this. This is what it says. Don't withhold good from them to whom it is due when it is in the power to do it. Don't envy evil men who prosper. Do not follow their ways, even if they appear to be profiting. Again, he brings this idea of don't follow false prosperity, even if other people seem to be profiting from it. That's what our children need to know. That's the kind of wisdom they need to acquire. Lesson number 7. It's time for romance. I love this part. This one gets exciting. But, okay, chapter 4. Now, chapters 4 and 5 are the hinge. This is where you go from junior high to high school. Chapters 4 and 5 are the transition. We already went through elementary school. Now we're in junior high. Pursue wisdom romantically. Guess why? Why should we tell our children to have a romantic relationship with wisdom when they're in junior high? It's kind of a little early, but it's God's way. Guess what happens? If you are romantically in love with wisdom, when folly comes her way, you'll know to walk the other direction. You will be enticed by folly's romanticism if you're not fully romantically in love with wisdom. And so that's why it's important to have this relationship. Pursue wisdom romantically as a priority. That's verse 5. Love her, verse 6. Prize and exalt her, verse 8. And again in verse 8, embrace her. That word is a romantic word in Hebrew. Embrace her. Love her. Lift her up. This is kind of a cool thing. Teaching our children to have a romantic relationship with wisdom, with Jesus himself, is so cool. Did you ever see that film where wisdom is getting, he has the girl and he twirls her around, but then all of a sudden folly comes and enticing her with drugs and with prosperity and sex. And then they're keeping Jesus away, and then Jesus has got to try to go. The Lighthouse film, it was. And if you haven't seen it, it is really powerful. Don't forget, he says, take fast hold of correction. This is in every lesson, by the way. Correction, correction, correction. Be willing to be correctable. Take fast hold of correction. Now in chapter 4, it's not just being willing to be corrected. Now when you are corrected, you really embrace it quickly. Take fast hold of correction. Don't let her go. She is your life, it says. Being corrected, it says, is our life. That is so important. Beware of the bread of wickedness and wine of violence. Put away false speech. Keep perverse talk far from you. Guess what? If you have a tendency to lie, which most people do, learn how to confess it quickly. Don't let it harbor in your life. Deal with it on a spiritual level. The way you deal with it is to confess it quickly. Don't leave it there. If you've got a child that's a liar, don't put soap in their mouth. Teach them how to confess it. I had a mom who had this, called me up, and she goes, Mark, she goes, I don't know what in the world we're going to do with our six-year-old. She goes, we think he's not our child. They've had six children. She goes, I said, what's going on? She goes, time to do the dishes. Our kids line up, all five of them, all six of them, and he's six now, and he gets the last, all he's got to do is put the plate in the water, in the suds, and then he hands it to his sister, and his sister will wash it off, and then it goes down, it gets dried, etc. I said, well, what's the problem with that? She goes, all he does is take the soap suds and throws it all over the kitchen, all over the cabinets, and all over his brothers and sisters. I said, I see. I said, you've got one normal child and five abnormal children. She goes, what? I said, are you serious? I said, he's 6 years old? God made bubbles for six-year-olds. I said, do me a favor. The next time he's got to do the dishes, I want you to have one of those big bottles of bubbles and tell him that if he puts the dish in there one time, he gets the bottle of bubbles and he can go blow them everywhere. Okay? Maybe outside if you don't want him in the house. But then the next time he does, I want you to get a larger bottle of bubbles, and then I want you to escalate it to the where you got that big hoop, you know, where you can actually go inside the bubble yourself and you're inside it. Make this fun. I said, you're so legalistic and so domineering that your son is just in this, he feels like he can't do anything. He's got to be corrected all the time by you. I said, that's not a correctable offense. I said, he's 6 years old. Make it fun. Correct him about his character faults in other areas. Take fast hold of correction. Chapter, lesson 8, beware, she flatters, she beguiles, and she, this is, okay, remember, we just went from chapter 4, this is the center, now chapter 5. Enticements are coming, folly flatters with her lips, beguiles with her beauty, entices with her touch. The greatest defense against folly's powerful enticements is to be intoxicated, that's the word it uses in chapter 5, be intoxicated with her love. And it says that about your wife, by the way, gentlemen. It says be intoxicated with the love of your wife. Intoxicated. That's kind of cool. I mean, I've never thought of that before. Have you ever thought of that concept? Don't be intoxicated with alcohol. Be intoxicated with the love of your wife. Be enthralled with her love. Be enthralled with every part of her essence. Because if you're not, you will be with somebody else. Don't go near folly's door, or you will pay a price for not heeding correction with the loss of virtue, valor, value, vigor, and vitality. That's found in chapter 5, verses 9 through 11. Those are the losses. And those losses are irretrievable. You will lose virtue, valor, value, vigor, and vitality. You'll give your honor to others, your years of laboring to the merciless. Less strangers will be filled with your wealth. Your labors will be in the house of a stranger, and your flesh and body will be consumed. I've seen this happen to so many men in ministry. They lose everything. And you say, how have I hated correction, and my heart despised and scorned reproof? That's what happens. Guess what happens? I hated instruction. I hated to be corrected. If the grass looks greener on the other side, you can be sure there are grubs under the turf. Lesson 9. Run. Chapter 9 is so cool. It's chapter 6, I mean, in Proverbs, and it makes no sense. It's completely out of context. It seems to be teaching something about contracts. Don't get yourself in contracts, business contracts, but it's not talking about that at all. In fact, the Hebrew words are the words for Zur and Nikor, which are the loose-lipped woman and the woman who's going to entice you into bed. This is what it's really saying. If you find yourself entrapped in a business relationship that's not morally healthy, just because you think you're going to prosper and you lower your defenses because you want to get this false prosperity, if you're in any kind of relationship at work, if you're in any kind of relationship socially or at church, where you have this relationship where maybe your spouse says, you know, I have a gut instinct, this isn't good. But all of a sudden you feel like, this will help us. This is what God says in this lesson. Deliver yourself like a trapped gazelle. Anyone know about a gazelle that gets trapped? If you trap a gazelle, guess what it will do to get out? It'll kill itself. It'll run against any object that's in its way until it's dead. And God gives us this illustration from nature to say, this is how badly I want you to get out of any relationship that appears, even on the surface, to be immoral or unethical. You get yourself in any kind of business decision that has that leaning, get out like a trapped gazelle. That's lesson 9. Lesson 10. Oh, look what it says at the end of this. Reproofs of correction are a way of life. Get used to it. Be willing to be corrected. It keeps going. Be corrected. Be corrected. That keeps going. Get used to it. Oh, this is what it says here. In the very end of chapter 6, it talks about adultery. Lesson 10, chapter 7. This is intense. When I read chapter 7 and I studied it for about several months, I got so sick both physically, emotionally, and spiritually, I couldn't study it anymore. Chapter 7 is one of the darkest books of the Bible. This is what it says. Unless you remain intimate with wisdom and have an intimate romantic relationship with wisdom, Mistress Folly will escalate her enticements from flattering words and flirting eyelids to not just Hunter, but Stealth Hunter. She no longer waits in her house for unsuspecting to come her way. She now sets traps to ambush on every corner. That's verse 12. This is all in the Bible. She attacks at night when the sons of Adam are most vulnerable by cloaking her character with the twilight of the evening. Says she's dressed in black late at night. The father uses a play on words to drive these warnings home. Twilight, evening, black, dark, night, harlot's attire, a concealed heart, all build upon one another to describe the great deception that's about to unfold. No longer, by the way, you're reading this as a story. The children are listening to this, and all of a sudden you get to chapter 7, and there's this great climax. This is it. This is it. You fail here, you're gone. This is incredible. It is now time to hunt her prey by the most fiendish tactics, the kiss of death. Even the mighty, the Bible says, cannot withstand her seductions. She caught him, it says, and she kissed him, and she said, I'm religious. In all my life, I've been diligently searching for a soulmate like you. And now, the Bible says, I found you. Verse 15, so yes, I'm willing to give my entire self to you, my body and my soul. Don't fall for it. It's a trap. Run like a gazelle, for there are many wounded in her wake, and her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death, and many mighty, it says, have already fallen there. You get to this part, you're like, this is the real stuff that our kids need to learn. Our kids need to know how to battle folly, because it's real. We live in a spiritual realm in this world. It's one thing to be prepared for college. It's another thing to be prepared for folly's tactics in the pursuit of wisdom. Number 11. Lesson 11. I love this. After you get to this climax in chapter 7, chapter 8 comes and it's this wisdom. It's like, I created everything for you so that you can enjoy me. And there's this like, whew. It's like, I can rest a little bit. And chapter 8 is absolutely gorgeous. Wisdom is sovereign and eternal. She means what she says, and she says what she means. One of her most important truths is heeding correction is once again brought to the forefront. Verses 10 and 11, she says, choose my correction instead of silver and knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired to her cannot be compared. If that's a true statement, then that's what we need to pursue for our kids. Wisdom is better than rubies, and all things in this world that may not be desired cannot be compared to her. That's what our kids need. Only a fool would reject her offer, as the text points out in 8, 15, and 16. Wisdom reintroduces the theme of the fear of the Lord, but now gives more insight as to what fearing the Lord looks like. And she says this, it's to hate evil, pride, arrogance, and the evil way, and the perverse mouth. That's what the fear of the Lord really is. In contrast, loving what wisdom loves results in riches, honor, enduring wealth, righteousness, and inheritance of treasures full. She is serious in her requirements, but romantically and creatively playful in her relationships. She wants to enjoy us. I love that. The last one, Wisdom and Folly, The Epic Battle, chapter 9. And boy, when you get to this one. So it's kind of cool how the story goes. Chapter 6, all the lessons. Chapter 8, there's this rest. Wisdom is like, okay, sit down and enjoy. Let's rest a little while because you're about to now enter the greatest battle of your life. This is the battle, chapter 9. The epic battle for the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is what you're searching for. All lessons have been gathered. Now you're ready to move forward to the very final test. Wisdom does all the work and invites freely. She hews out her pillars, 7 pillars. She kills her beast. This is time for prime rib. She sets her tables, sends out invitations. She bakes her bread. She mixes her wine. This is kind of cool. This is what it says in chapter 9. Wisdom does all this stuff. You don't have to do anything now. You got to just come and enjoy it. It's free. The banquet is free. You've already paid the price. Interesting. Folly offers a counterfeit of pleasures. She offers hidden bread, stolen waters, not real wine. leading to temporary excitement, arousal of the senses, and pleasures. That's what folly. Wisdom offers real wine, mixed wine. She bakes her own bread. Folly offers hidden bread. You know why it's hidden? Because it has this adrenaline rush of getting something that you're getting away with. That's what happens with sin and perversion. In chapter 1, the simple mockers and fools are invited to know wisdom. In chapter 9, the mockers and the fools have a closed door and they're not invited. Only the simple and the wise are invited. It's too late. Unless you embrace the first 11 rules, you'll not be able to enjoy wisdom's blessings. What you have here is an actual chart of what this looks like in framed. Chapter 9 is written as a mirror image. What takes place in the beginning also takes place in the end. What wisdom does, folly tries to undo. And the whole thing works all the way to the very center until you get to the very middle. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, I realize that this is just a ton of information. It took me 2.5 years to write that. I just gave it to you in 55 minutes. So I don't expect you, but what I want you to do from here is just, at least you've got a sense of the seriousness of these 12 rules. I'm going to provide this information that you can for free that you can look at. There's a book coming out as well. And what I'd like you to do is just spend some time reading this now, Proverbs 1 through 10, 10 verse 1, reading it through with your kids and seeing it as a complete story and what you can use in your home to teach your children what God says may be the most important lessons in life. Because if you're willing to turn at God's reproof, He'll pour out His Spirit to you, make known His words to you. Knowledge will become pleasant to your soul, and He will deliver you from the loose-lipped woman and the evil-talking man. And boy, when you have that, you've got the greatest treasures ahead of you that God will use you in a mighty way to change this world. So God bless you. Thank you for being a part of this. And I know it was like a lot of information, but let's move forward from here. God bless you guys. Thank you for coming.